The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
You are listening to the Bastards of Boston Baseball. Red Sox win tonight 10-3. Brian Bayo tosses seven innings of one-run ball. Framber Valdez, who had a 2.83 career ERA against the Boston Red Sox, gives up 10. So if you had that on your bingo card, Bayo having his best start or best appearance, whatever you want to call it, and Valdez having his worst, we congratulate you. No one saw any of that coming. I am Terry Cushman, joined tonight by Juan Liriano. It's going to take a little for the name to flow.
That was perfect. That was perfect.
Appreciate that. No relation to the Pittsburgh starting pitcher from a handful of years ago.
I wish.
Okay. All right. Now, are you from, I think he was from the Dominican Republic. Is that where your ancestry?
Yep. Dominican Republic.
Okay. Yep. That's a hotbed. Every time I see that WBC lineup, I'm like, how do they not win it? You know, maybe the pitching isn't, you know, it's equally
not,
as good.
It's not what it should be. So I get
yeah.
it.
Yeah. But when you see Manny, I think Tatis, it's like, oh my God, that's an amazing lineup. Sign every one of those guys to Boston and we'll beat the Dodgers every year. But so thoughts on tonight. We did win last night. Coming off of a win, I felt Detroit was a little asleep at the wheel a little bit, and the Red Sox showed up ready to fight.
Honestly, today I didn't think the Red Sox had a good chance to win. I mean, starting off with this whole idea that, well, Brian Bayo is going to pitch the bulk of the game, but we're going to have someone start the game. That to me was kind of moronic, but it turns out that it did work out because it happens to be Brian Bayo's best game of the season. The offense showed up against one of the most dominant pitchers, I think, in the league in Valdez, and I mean, shook him to his core. Ends up throwing at Trevor Story, ends up getting, kicked out of the game. These are all things that I honestly was not expecting. And I have here, there were so many people that contributed to today's win that I honestly had them as people that I was ready to criticize for today's podcast, for having them in the game. You have Seidan Rafaela, 3-1 home run. Also RBI single. You have Connor Wong with an RBI single. You have IKF, even though he grounded into a fielder's choice, it still was an RBI. Caleb Durbin with an RBI single, and it all happened in the third inning there, where they had about five consecutive singles. So the offense showed up. Brian Bayo dominated, which I was not expecting. So you got to give him props for at least figuring things out for this game.
So I'm a bit of a Brian Bayo apologist. I kind of put it on the Red Sox pitching staff, Andrew Bailey, the assistants. Bayo, he hasn't really seemed lost out there. Yeah, he's thrown a lot of non-competitive pitches, as Will Middlebrooks points out. But you don't really see him throwing tantrums. You don't see him on the mound throwing tantrums. You don't see it in the post game. You see a guy who's kind of searching for it. And it's just hard to imagine he's just suddenly this bad. And tonight, I was a little annoyed at the opener situation, because who in that bullpen do you really trust? besides Whitlock and Chapman, obviously. And if you listen to the last night's show, I think Jason and Doug are a little concerned about Whitlock in his last few outings. And I don't know if I'm concerned, but it concerns me that a couple of my guys are concerned. So, you know, I just, it's not like we have Brennan Bernardino, who's probably one of the greatest openers of all time. Based on what we've seen in previous seasons, that dude was just money. He plays for Colorado now. In 16 appearances this year, he's got a 1.88 ERA, and he's only given up one home run. Like, we don't have that guy. Tonight, we had Giovanni Moran, who gave up two runs, had the bases loaded. That easily could have been a sideways inning there. Bale was warming up in the pen, but you couldn't just bring him in the first inning with runners on. It would have defeated the whole purpose. And then if those runners all scored, it just would have been a huge embarrassment to Chad Tracy and the Red Sox. Tracy didn't have anybody else up warming. I'm not saying he necessarily should have, but the inning was going sideways. And fortunately, we got out of it just giving up two runs. So, you know, if we had a Bernardino type guy, I'd be like, okay, you know, maybe for Bayo's next few, let's just do it, I guess. But we don't have that guy. And I'd rather Brian Bayo just get fixed. I'd rather you just fix the kid. And I'm not throwing out the future ace label. I don't think we've really done that since probably at least 2024.
Yep.
But I think he's fixable. And if he was ever in a trade to another team, they'd probably turn him into a number two or a number three starter. And I think it's a huge indictment on Andrew Bailey if he's unable to fix this guy. When other pitchers have left the organization, I mean, I'm getting tired of bringing up Kyle Harrison. And last year it was Quinn Priester. He's injured now. But they have to fix this guy. And I would have felt a lot better about tonight had he started the game but given us the same seven-inning performance. Even if he gave up three runs tonight, I would have taken that over six or seven innings. That would have been a meaningful step forward. And as it turned out, he only gave up one.
Yeah, the question for me is what happens if in his next outing he doesn't perform as well as he did tonight? Like, are you going to go ahead and do another bullpen or opener game with Brian Bale? And my concerns with him is, well, we have Sonny Gray hopefully coming back tomorrow. Garrett Crochet is hopefully coming back soon. What are we going to do? I love what I'm seeing from Peyton Tolley. Of course, what we're seeing from Connelly early outside of his last outing. What are you going to do with Brian Bale? Does he fit in this rotation? Because you've got your five guys, including Ranger Suarez, of course. You've got your five guys, and I'm including Peyton Tolley there because he's been nuts. What are you going to do with Brian Bale? Is this the formula to get him back to where he needs to be? Because this is a question, and I feel a conversation that's been going on for far too long with Brian Bale. I mean, at this point, I feel like he should have things figured out, and we're having to have openers for him to be able to perform to the level that we expect from him. So I don't know. I think that's going to be a conversation at least for the next few weeks. What's going to happen with Brian Bale as we get our starting pitchers back healthy?
You know, that's an excellent question because the timetable for Garrett Crochet seems to be that of maybe he was only going to miss one or two starts, in which case I doubt he would even go down to AAA for a rehab start. I mean, why even do that at this point? Like, who's going to replace him and give you, you're better off just throwing him out there. So that's interesting. Perhaps tomorrow's a big day for Sonny Gray. You know, he wasn't pitching super well in his last couple of starts before the hamstring. So we'll see. I think he's probably catching Detroit at a good time. I mean, they just didn't look like they showed up tonight, you know, for a fight after losing last night. You had McKinstry, you know, not come up with that, you know, routine grounder. And that would have ended the inning, and you wouldn't have had that Rafaela three-run bomb. I think the Tigers still win even without that. I think the third inning was going to happen regardless with all those runs. You had two outfielders not hustle to what looked like a semi-routine fly. It just kind of dropped in front of both of them. So I guess it's going to be interesting tomorrow to see what kind of lineup shows up to fight Sonny Gray. So that's one guy. It's hard to justify sending Peyton Tolley down. You know, he struck out seven or eight guys last night, looked very good. Curveball was nasty. I think he got seven or eight whiffs or, you know, caught lookings on it. Yeah, it's an interesting problem, and we don't really know Ranger Suarez's status. They did say he's still day to day. That was the update today. And they said he's progressing positively.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, what do you do? Bayo does have options. You can send him up and down as much as you want for the rest of the year.
Yep. And I think in looking at Tolley's performances, I mean, you look at what he did against the Yankees, striking out 11. You look at his performance against the Blue Jays, where he pitched four and a half innings, only allowed three hits, three earned runs, four strikeouts. It's not these performances that we're getting from Brian Bayo, where he's melting the minute he has any adversity. He's just melting, and he doesn't know what to do. And I did put in my notes for today's episode that I feel like maybe sending him down. I did look at that in his contract. It's not something that the Red Sox can't do. They can go ahead and put him down there if he's not figuring things out. Because again, you have these five starters that I do feel are performing, even if they're struggling, like you mentioned, Sonny Gray, they are performing better than Brian Bayo. So I'm just happy he was able to figure it out, because I do feel like it's a good problem to have six guys that you can trust to go out there. But the question is, what happens the next time he starts and he faces any adversity? Are we just going to have to do this again? And I don't think this is a recipe for us to win. I mean, it worked today, but I don't think that this is something we should be doing moving forward.
Well, it'll be interesting tomorrow, because they will have to make a roster move once Sonny Gray is activated. So who goes down? And I don't think you can bring that person up for 15 days unless there's an injury. If someone gets hurt, then you can do it. So, you know, do you want to send Tolley down after pitching, you know, the way that he did the other night? Or is it important that he makes his start against Tampa? Could Connelly Early be sent down? And someone on Twitter, I forget which account it was, mentioned that, yeah, you know, his surface numbers look okay, but when you go and you look at his save on chart, nothing is off the charts. Like, you know, he doesn't give up a ton of soft contact, not a ton of whiffs, you know. So part of me wonders if he's gonna be the one to get sent down.
That's a good point. And again, I think when you compare it, we're comparing the Red Sox pitchers. That's what we're doing here. And you can look at any advanced numbers and point to Connelly Early struggling. It still doesn't compare to what's been happening with Brian Bayo. I mean, I don't think those kids deserve that, to be quite honest with you. I think it ultimately what ends up happening here is Connelly Early or Peyton Tolley get sent down. I don't know what's been going on with the protection of Brian Bayo, but if it were me, I'm sending Brian Bayo down.
It could be. I don't think they would announce that till tomorrow. But, you know, when you look at Bayo's line tonight, seven innings pitched, gave up four hits, walked just one, struck out seven. He hasn't struck out seven batters since last August 10th, which was in San Diego against the Padres. He did give up five earned runs that game, so it wasn't a particularly great game. The previous month, July 8th, he struck out 10, which sounds amazing, but then you find out it was the Colorado Rockies. So, you know, I don't know what to do. Like I said, I'm a Bayo guy. When you compare ceilings, I think his ceiling is probably higher than Sonny Gray's. I'm not a Sonny Gray guy. I wanted to light Red Sox Nation on fire, metaphorically, when that trade happened. I hated that from the minute it got announced. And so I'd rather have Bayo than Gray. But you know, they will have to make a roster move. I'm refreshing Twitter tonight to figure out what that could be. But they could always send a reliever down, possibly. I'm not sure if that makes a lot of sense. But when you're looking at ceilings, I mean, what do you think Bayo's ceiling is?
I think his ceiling is what I was told when he came up. I mean, at least when he signed his contract, we were told by our guy Pedro Martinez that he was the next Pedro Martinez, and that's at least who I expected. I mean, I grew up watching Pedro dominate, and looking at this kid, I just haven't felt like going from year to year that he's shown any improvement. Like, again, I'm going to point to this year because this is what we have. And prior to this start here, where he essentially just crumbles whenever he's facing any adversity. And that's one of the things that I feel like at this point, especially after signing his contract, at this point, you should have figured it out. So I initially thought it was a Pedro ceiling, but man, maybe a fifth starter is what I'm looking at now. And that's, I'm lowering the standards, but that's what I'm looking at when I see Brian Bayo, maybe a fourth or fifth starter for this team.
Okay. I have him just a little bit higher as more of a three or four. But so, and the reason I ask that is when you look at the rest of the rotation, whose ceiling is as high? I think we both agree now, Crochet for sure. I'm a Ranger Suarez guy. I was all for it. I didn't think that would be the pivot from Alex Bregman. I think Suarez should have been what happened at the time of the Gray trade, I think. But so those guys have high ceilings. Toley, I'm a little concerned about because he's kind of a two-pitch guy. He's a fastball, curveball guy, and I want to see a third, you know, off-speed pitch before I'm like comfortable, like, okay, he's definitely a major leaguer and he's probably done with minor league pitching. So, you know, I'm a little skeptical there, and we'll see him against tougher lineups and we'll see how he navigates them. And early, I mean, he was pitching in the playoffs. I mean, he won the confidence of the Red Sox to start game three. So I don't know. I don't, it's tough. It's tough trying to figure out who the best five are.
Yeah, that's going to be a question for them to answer. I do think that, again, it's a good problem to have, which we knew this going into the season when we were just signing pitchers left and right and we were bringing up Connelly early and Peyton Toley. We knew that we were going to have a surplus of pitchers. And I do honestly feel like knowing the injury histories with some of these pitchers, it's a good problem to have. We don't know what Sonny Gray is going to look like, you know, if he does pitch tomorrow, right? We don't know. Hopefully it's good news with Garrett Crochet and what we've been told, but we don't know what's going to happen with Garrett Crochet and his injury history moving forward. So it's good to have these pitchers there. If we need to send one down to then bring him up at some other point, we can do that. But hopefully this is not something that shakes his confidence if he ends up going down to AAA or if they take him out of the rotation. And I'm referring to Brian Bayo here. Hopefully it doesn't shakes his confidence. I do want the kid to succeed. I do want him to continue to grow. I want him to be with the Red Sox and dominate with the Red Sox moving forward. But I need to see it.
Hard pivot. Is Framber Valdez a bitch?
He's dirty. He is so dirty. And you mentioned something about the energy of the team. And I just kept thinking about what happened with the Astros. I generally feel like the players kind of saw what happened there and they just gave up on him. Because that's the kind of vibe that he gives off. I mean, the minute something goes wrong or somebody looks at him the wrong way, he wants to act the way that he's acting and throwing at players and acting like he's done nothing wrong. I do genuinely feel like players gave up on him tonight, and rightfully so. And that's the fear that many teams had in the offseason to sign him. I mean, we looked at him going as long as he did. Man, why is he not being signed? Why aren't the Mets just throwing money at this guy? This is why, because of what he did last season and what he did tonight. I'm glad the Boston Red Sox didn't go after him. I'm so glad.
You know, I was not a huge proponent, I wouldn't say, of Valdez, but I was open-minded throughout the winter, and I probably would have preferred Ranger because of the postseason pedigree. I mean, he's a phenomenal performer. But, you know, Valdez has been to the dance before. He won a ring in 2022, I believe. Don't think he was up. I think he debuted actually in 2018, so he missed that 2017 run.
Yeah,
they would have taught him how to cheat, so that was, you know, probably good. But yeah, and when the controversy last season where he got the catcher crossed up happened, I kind of gave him the benefit of the doubt. I'm like, he's never been a hot-headed guy. He's never really had a controversy. And, you know, I never really did a deep dive on what the full details of it were. You know, sometimes pitchers and catchers don't get along. My favorite one is actually, you're going back a little ways. Was it Jake Peavy? I'm getting the names mixed up. Jake Peavy and AJ Pierzynski. For some reason, they were both on the White Sox. They weren't getting along. They weren't on the same page. They were frustrated with each other. I can't remember if they were seen getting into a verbal altercation or not, but when the game ended, they went up to I think it was Peavy, and he goes, well, what was the deal? Why were you guys, you know, at each other? And Peavy goes, well, we're both hunters, and we were comparing, you know, which game is more challenging or something, you know, which animal, what's the difficult hunt. And that was his story. Well, he didn't get together with AJ because the media went straight over to him and they're like, AJ, what's going on? You know, why were you guys jawing at each other? And Pierzynski goes, well, you see, you know, we're both college football fans. He likes Alabama. I like Florida State. You know, we were just arguing over, you know. And so they handled it like professionals, you know. They didn't give the media much, you know. And so, you know, with the Valdez thing, I just, you know, it was kind of puzzling to see that last year after not really seeing a ton of controversy. And then tonight, I mean, what kind of a message are you sending? You've given up 10 and you're going to throw and hit a guy in the middle of his back. Like, what does that just makes you look so much worse. That just validates everything they've done to you tonight. And you go back a long time, you know, 20 years, maybe a little over that, you know, Pedro was just getting destroyed by the Yankees, and his way of handling it was saying, it was by simply tipping his cap and saying, they're my daddy. Yeah. You know, Pedro handled it with class. And what you saw tonight with Framber Valdez wasn't classy. It makes him look really bad. I mean, it's a dark cloud over him. And the other interesting thing was after the benches cleared, I mean, it didn't get too intense, but they all, you know, kind of congregated around the first baseline there as Story made his way down. And, you know, eventually they disperse. Everyone's back in the dugouts and in the bullpens. And the camera kind of pans to AJ Hinch, who, by the way, was Valdez's manager in 2018 and 19. So it's not like it's their first season together. And AJ, you could just see him just like exasperated, and he just takes this deep breath. And I think, I'm only speculating, I'm thinking what might have gone through his mind was Valdez didn't want to go back out. AJ said he had to because the bullpen was taxed from the previous two nights. And they had the Sunday night game. They had the late game in Texas, I think. And so he wanted Valdez to just throw a couple more innings. And I think AJ was like, that is not what I thought would just happen.
and that's the problem I have with Valdez. And that's why I don't give him the benefit of the doubt, especially, you know, I'm not a professional athlete. I play sports, right? And you know, we get heated, you get emotional. Those are the types of guys I don't like playing with, man. Like, I've seen those guys before. I saw what he did last season, and what he did today was just another emotional move. If what you're saying is true, right, with AJ Hinch and him, and he goes ahead and he does that, that's not the type of guy I want in my corner. I just don't. So that's why I don't give him the benefit of the doubt. That's the type of guy he is, and that's why most teams didn't want him, despite having that championship experience on his end. Teams still kind of doubted, and it's because of that behavior.
Yeah, I mean, perhaps it is a bullet dodged. You know, we needed two starting pitchers. We got one really good one in Suarez. The other one will pitch tomorrow, and we'll see what happens. But yeah, it's just kind of, you would think a guy who has pitched at a high level, won a ring. And by the way, I mean, he went to the 2019 World Series, won a pennant that year, lost to the Nationals, went back in 2021, you know, after winning the pennant to face the Braves. Braves ended up winning one of the most improbable championship runs. I mean, first week of August, they were under 500. Like, I can't remember what they did at the deadline, but you know, no one had that on their radar. And then finally, you know, in 2022, you know, he does win a ring, you know, with Dusty Baker managing the team. So this shouldn't be a guy who, you know, is angry at the world. It was a bad start in the month of May, and, you know, what's a long season. You know, if he's healthy, he'll make probably 30 starts. I don't know. Is Detroit a playoff team?
I still think they are. I mean, I'm going to hold back on that. It all depends on what happens with Scooble. That's the guy that leads them as far as they're going to go. So we have to wait and see. I know they said about 2 to 3 months. Can they hold off while he's out? That's going to be the big question, because they go as far as Scooble goes.
Yeah. And you know, the Central's pretty tough. I mean, the Royals are starting to show signs of figuring it out. Cleveland, annoyingly, is tough. I mean, they're good for usually at least 80-something wins, 90-something on a good year. So we'll see what they do. They got that Chase DeLauder guy that's all the rage right now in Cleveland. So I don't know. But typically, you know, I try to be pro-Detroit, but the fact that they won't lock up their ace kind of annoys me. You know, Detroit isn't a small market team, and their previous, well, I guess we can call him their previous owner, Mike Ilitch, passed away a few years ago. His kids now have it, but Ilitch was in charge, you know, in the 2010s, when that team was just a wagon with Scherzer, Verlander. Miggy was kind of probably on the back end of his prime, but still, you know, a really good ball player for a while. And, you know, I think baseball is better if Detroit is a good team. And so it's kind of frustrating to see how they're kind of handling business.
Yeah, they probably see the lockout coming next season. They probably don't want to spend the money, right, on Tarik Skubal. I mean, look at our team, right? Our team should be in the hunt for a guy like that, because we do have the money, but they don't want to. And teams have been showing that you know, kind of pulling back on spending money and putting the money on these players, these big contracts. It could be one of those situations where they're just saying, we don't want to spend the money. We don't want to spend money like that anymore. We don't think we're a championship team. Look at what the Dodgers are doing. Who's going to beat them anyways? That could more than likely be their mindset.
Yeah, it could be. Typically, I'm a guy that, like, I'm good with the mid-market pitchers. You know, go get your Ranger Suarez's. You know, if, like I said, if Valdez wasn't a hothead, I would have been fine with a guy like him. but also develop a couple. And I think you can win a championship with that type of a rotation. We had a very strong farm system, so we went and got Crochet, which is great. You know, if you can draft and develop, then, you know, those moves are available too. I'm not a big sign someone for $400 million type guy. Ironically, I did want Soto. I was supportive of that. I think perhaps maybe we dodged a bullet there as well, you know, based on some of the stuff we're hearing, you know, out of Queens. But yeah, I just think you can build a smart team. Like you look at 04, we didn't go all out for anyone. We just made smart signings. Same could be said for 07. We made a really smart trade with the Marlins to get Beckett and Lowell.
Yeah,
you know, those are great moves, you know. And in 2013, you had your core of players, most of which were homegrown: Pedroia, Ellsbury, Poppy. You know, I don't know if you call him homegrown. He had his breakout seasons with the Red Sox, so call that what you want. I'm probably missing at least one more player. And then Ben Sherrington, to his credit, went and just got three solid veterans. You know, Victorino, Napoli, Johnny Gomes. And, you know, we didn't go all out for that team either. Lester was homegrown. That was a guy I kind of forgot about. So was Clay Buchholz. So I think if you're a smart organization, you can figure it out. The problem is we're dumb as hell in the last decade.
Yeah. And I mean, for some reason, we don't believe that building a power offense wins championship. You reference the 04 team, the 07 team. You know, we had Big Poppy and Manny, right? Mm-hmm. In 2018, we had JD Martinez. We had Mookie Betts. There was power with those teams. And you look at our team now, there's no pop whatsoever. Maybe Wilson Contreras, but, I mean, you have to build a team that can hit home runs, and that's been their weakness. And for whatever reason, they're refusing to go after players that can hit home runs. That's what wins.
You know, it feels like we got Wilson Contreras a couple of years too late. Just imagine if he was on that 2021 team.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what we're missing.
Energy. I think that's the biggest thing with Wilson Contreras. You need that energy. You need that type of feistiness that he brings every single game. Of course, you want a talented team around him. I think I mentioned that to one of my friends where, like, man, I do wish we would have had him earlier. Because there's no talent here, at least on the offensive side, there's no talent here. If we can have a guy like that, that's maybe our fifth best hitter.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, that would have been lovely. But I just don't think the Red Sox are going after guys like that anymore. They're refusing to do that.
Even in 2022, you still had JD, you still had Xander, Christian Vasquez. I think he was kind of slipping by that point, but you know, you just needed that guy. And now we have him, but we've been trash. And, you know, I think we've been operating towards the floor. I think Duran's starting to come around. We didn't really get much of an update on Roman Anthony today, by the way, but they said he's still day to day. It's probably a sprain. So we'll see. You know, yeah, what?
The last update I saw, they confirmed that he won't be returning for the Tiger series, which is obviously ending tomorrow. Other than that, they don't have a timetable for his return.
Right. You know, I'm just thinking, what if they just put him on the IL? That would get Gray, although you probably can't carry too many pitchers. I forget what the rules are on that. I think you can only carry 12 or 13. So I was just trying to sneak Gray back onto the active roster without sending a pitcher down, but you might have to. But we'll figure that out. I mean, tomorrow, I think it's a primetime game, so we'll see what happens there. But yeah, I'm liking what I'm seeing from Contreras. You know, his attitude, I didn't really love the way he handled himself in that Brewer series, but, you know, I'll give him a pass for now.
It was probably the emotions were running high. It got away from him, but I do feel like this team needs that. If they want any hope of, I don't know, competing and, you know, having any fear, right, of putting fear on the other team, you need a guy like that. You just need it. And he's got a hell of a defense. He's got pop. He's perfect for this franchise. It just sucks that there's just nothing around him. There's nothing there.
It is unfortunate because he profiles so well and he's so good and he's just a good all around baseball player, offensively, defensively. I mean, what? Maybe he's probably not going to steal 20 bags a year on you or on the opposing teams, but or even five for all we know. But yeah, let's see. So all right, we'll get to tomorrow. We've got Sonny Gray coming back. No idea what to do, and he actually is listed on the MLB site. So if we weren't sure yet, we can be now. He will be pitching against Jack Flaherty, who has basically pitched like the cat's ass. go back two starts. He only lasted two innings against the Cincinnati Reds. Five hits, six earned runs, walked two, struck out four. His next start was better, but not by a ton. That was against the Texas Rangers. 3 2/3 innings pitched, five hits, four earned runs, walked three, struck out four. So perhaps we're catching him at the right time, and perhaps we can get our first sweep of the season.
That's the hope. But the one thing we do know about this team is that they do know how to make these bad pitchers look good. All right. I mean, tonight was awesome. Tonight was just amazing to see this offense perform the way that it did, but we do know that it can turn around very quickly, and that would be my only fear, right? You have Sonny Gray coming back. You don't know how he's going to look, so more than likely we're going to need this offense to put up a similar performance, you know, 6-7 runs maybe to be able to come out with the win. The good thing is the bullpen is rested, right? We didn't probably used about, I think, two or three guys tonight. So the bullpen is rested for tomorrow if they're needed, you know, to come in earlier than expected. The question is always this offense. Can Jaren Duran stay hot? Is Masataka Yoshida playing tomorrow now that we know Jack Flaherty is pitching tomorrow, right? So we got that righty-lefty matchup. Can they stay hot and perform the way that they've done in these first two games? That's going to be the question. I do hope that Sonny Gray shows some life tomorrow. And gives us a shot, because I don't expect this offense to put up, you know, 10 plus runs again two nights in a row.
And honestly, wouldn't shock me. And I think Yoshida most likely will DH if Anthony's not in the lineup, because you just put Jaren Duran in left. I just think it's an easy fit there. We'll see what goes down. I think we did face him in the previous series, if I'm not mistaken. We faced Valdez, and I think that probably could have helped, you know, the recency of having just faced him a couple weeks ago. You know, that was probably a benefit, and it could be a benefit against Flaherty. So, you know, one of our regulars here, not high expectations for Mr. Sandler, probably no relation to Adam, because no offense, Brad, you're not very funny. Very, you know, accurate. He says keep Duran in the leadoff. I think most of the podcast agrees with that, myself included. Jules says play Meyer, damn it. Couldn't agree more. That was the same tweet. Had we lost tonight, I would have went scorched earth on that, but I will save that take for another show. And I think on that we will wrap. We'll be back tomorrow night. I think it's myself, Chris Felico, and Dougie Sunshine if they win, Dougie Rainclouds if we lose. And we'll be back to go over what did happen. So everyone have a good night, and we'll see you tomorrow.